You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 300. This week, we talk about
300.
Visit welcometocomics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
This whole discussion where when we were like, how old is Lucas now? And he went back through his whole Google calendar trying to find like your son's birthday.
Oh.
Yeah
he's six,
right? Okay.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's been a while. How old is Dahlia?
Three?
Okay.
Doesn't make them, sometimes they don't act their age.
Well, I know people who are like 30 who also don't, so
yeah.
Maybe it's just like a lifelong thing.
Yeah, it's just life.
Yeah. Dang, it's been a while though. Because I think when I first met you, Lucia was not even pregnant.
I think she was probably, oh no, maybe not. Because Lucas was born in June of 2011. So right around the time, I think,
yeah,
we started. I think we started doing the podcast right before she got pregnant.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because Andy found also, like, around the time Lucas was born, we were on episode
22.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Wait, no, that's when my wife and I had our one-year anniversary.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah, or no, that was when we that was when we had our date. It was when we were doing 18 to 22.
Your first date?
Yeah, our first date.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah.
Memories. Let's celebrate them with Frank Miller, all fucking people.
Tell me how you really feel.
So, before we get into that, San Francisco Comic Con was last weekend. Yeah, just last weekend. And David,
yep,
you and I were both there, but on different days. We were going to be the same day, but then we ended up not working out. My daughter had a fever on Saturday, so I didn't go Saturday. I went Sunday instead, and you weren't there. So I was like, oh, God, all is lost. But how was your day Saturday?
It was really hot. The fan in my helmet was not up to the task.
Yeah, because it was a hot weekend, too, especially for San Francisco.
So usually my helmet fan is good enough, but for whatever reason, the power pack didn't charge all the way, and I think just because it was so hot, like the fan wasn't pushing enough air. So I'm going to make some modifications. I'm going to use a different power source and add at least one more fan in my helmet.
I mean, I think it was a good dry run, because if we do Celebration again and you bring your kit down to like Orlando,
well,
or you
in
bring your
Orlando,
kit down to San Diego even, or I mean Anaheim.
Well, I did wear it in Orlando, and
yeah,
it was much better. I don't know what it was. I think it had more to do with my underpowered, the USB battery pack not being up to the task for some reason. So what I'm going to do is some people use like RC car battery packs. So I'm going to switch to that. And then add a second fan. Because the fan is really for, at least for me, it's more for defogging the visor. And it was just not doing it. Like, I would keep the helmet on for like 10 minutes, and then it would be like impossible to see.
Yeah, it's not a huge visor to begin with. So I'm sure if it fogs up even a little bit, you're just boned.
Mm-hmm. So, that's okay. These kind of things happen.
Did you buy any art? Did you do anything fun, or were you just like trooping the table the whole time?
No, I like walked the floor and stuff. And honestly, I didn't think that this con was that great.
Hmm.
I didn't go to any panels, unfortunately. But like, I don't know. I thought like Silicon Valley was a lot better.
Which it better be, because it's like double the price.
Yeah. So I ended up, the only thing I bought is there was a guy selling a bunch of trades. He was like a comic book shop, and I bought, he had all the trades for like everything was at least 10% off. I ended up buying the first, or the whole, I don't know if this is all of them or not, but I bought the first six trades of, Wicked and Divine.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then I bought volume two of I Hate Fairyland. Have you guys read that?
No.
It's like by Scotty Young. I think he does the story and the art.
Huh.
And it's about this little girl who like, somehow she gets transported into like a fairy tale land. Except she somehow gets trapped there. And she's been trapped there for like 30 years. So she's like she's like this really surly 30-year-old woman trapped in like a 8-year-old's body. And she's trying to figure out her way out of Fairyland, but it's like super violent and stuff. It's pretty insane.
I will have to check that out.
And it's very colorful and, you know, it's Scotty Young art.
Yeah.
So
he's the one who does like the kids covers of stuff, right?
Yeah. I was like kind of hesitant to read it at first, but one of my friends talked me into it, and I read the first trade, and I was like, this is pretty hilarious. So I bought the second one.
Yeah, and I remember seeing some examples of Scotty Young's art before he dipped into that style, and that style, he's still a good artist, but he was a really good artist otherwise, too. Like, he's not a one-trick pony. I think when somebody has a definite, like, not a definitive, but a distinctive style like that, you kind of slip into, oh, well, that's just who they are. But he was a damn good artist outside of that, too.
I think we're just, this is what he gets hired to do, kind of stuff.
This pays the bills, so I'm drawing this.
But yeah, I love getting the variants, the Scotty Young Star Wars variants and stuff. Overall, I thought that the con was fine.
Yeah, none of the panels looked really inspiring to me. And for me, like, the sole reason I went was to go on Sunday to get a photo op and an autograph from Summer Glau. That was 100% of the reason that I went. And I'm so pissed because on Sunday I drove up there by myself because my daughter was still homesick at the hospital getting checked for a UTI. But for anybody who doesn't know, I'm a huge fan of Summer Glau, and she hardly ever does cons in Northern California. Hardly ever. So it's either this, or I happen to go to, like, WonderCon again, which is highly unlikely for quite a while. So, like, this is my one chance. I was going to go Saturday, but we moved to Sunday, and my daughter's feeling a little bit better. I was like, okay, we can do this. I can go. But I was, like, having, like, a little bit of sick stuff going on, too, so I missed the photo op because I was in the bathroom. And I was like, motherfucker, oh, that's half the reason I come up here. But you can do selfies at the booth, and I got the autographs just fine. And I walked the floor a little bit, and there was some okay stuff, artist-wise, but it really was the exact same crowd that I see at Fanime and Silicon Valley, and that I saw at Big Wow. And it's not that they're good artists, it's just that as somebody who supports the local convention scene, like I try to do, I've seen them all. I've seen them all a bunch. And I like them, but I've bought a lot of their stuff, and most of the stuff that I've wanted, I've bought. And I've, you know, if it's somebody I like, I found them and I followed them, and I can just order their print any old time. I don't have to pay $40 to get into a convention to pay again. So, I don't know if I would go again. I'll apply for a panel next year. Maybe we can do a live now that Jen is back in country.
Oh, God.
No, it's fine. But, for a little bit, I was thinking if this convention was one of those celebrity shill conventions. You know, there's different kinds of conventions. There's the small local ones with artists and comic books and digging through bins. There's the up-and-coming ones like Phoenix Comic Con, Emerald City, Silicon Valley, that are, you know, getting big, but definitely not the New York City C2E2 or SDCC crowd. But then there's the other group of stuff that's just there to have you come in and get autographs and photo ops from celebrities. And not that that isn't legitimate, because believe me, it is. That's why I went to San Francisco, and there's another one in December called Heroes and Villains, and they do, like, you know, 20 cities a year they host this thing. And it's pretty much just go and meet celebrities. And my wife and I are going to go to meet Zachary Levi because he's fucking awesome. And I want an awesome photo op with him.
Nice. But I'll be at that one.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if this convention is kind of tilting that way. Because, like, maybe a quarter of the show floor was celebrity photo ops and signings and stuff. And probably about a quarter of the panel schedule was the celebrities doing Q&As, which, I mean, I get, you got them there. I'm sure you're paying them to be there, or they're, you know, there's some arrangement having them there, and they're drawing people in for you. Give them a panel, give them a Q&A, give them floor space. It's part of your draw. But, I don't know, it's a little disingenuous when they call it San Francisco Comic Con, and you go, and a quarter of it is celebrities.
Well, like, the thing, too, is, like, even the vendors weren't that great. I mean, there weren't a lot of comic vendors.
Yeah.
It was a lot of people selling, like, I always look out for certain types of action figures and stuff, and I didn't really find anything that I was looking for.
Yeah, so for some reason, you know, those jewelry vendors, too. So do we want to just get on this week's comic?
Yeah.
Is Jen still awake?
I am.
Oh, it sounds like just barely.
I'm like so jet lagged. I'm sorry.
No.
It's been like a week and a half too. It's insane.
Well, it's quite a shift. Don't worry.
And it's not like you went on vacation and came back. You spent a year in that other time.
Fully adjusted. I was like living on Germany time for reals.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome back. This is episode 300. So we read 300. There's no extra fanfare than that. We just thought it'd be witty and fun. Because, you know, you get to 100, and then you get to 250, and then there's, like, numbers after that. But really, after that, the big one is 500. So we might not have fanfare for another 4 years. If we're still doing this in 4 years.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
God, David, all three of our kids will be in, like, elementary school by then.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we read 300 for episode 300. And I feel like what you kind of got to get out of the way is, from what I know, 95% of the people I meet day to day probably don't even know there's a comic book of this. They probably only know that there's a movie.
I didn't know there was a comic until there was a movie.
Yeah, I had no idea either. Not a clue. So I think it's like impossible to get around the comparisons to the movie. So they're going to come up. I just want to put that disclaimer out there. I also want to say right up the bat, I mean, this was a fun, quick read. I don't know if fun's the right word with all this death, but I think I enjoyed the movie better. I don't know if that's blasphemous to like a movie better than a book.
No, I felt the same way.
Okay, good. Good. I also feel that about Harry Potter, but don't kill me.
I don't remember the movie very well. It's been a long time.
I feel like, I think, oh, go David.
I didn't even make any noise. That's interesting. Well, anyways. I thought the movie the movie followed the comic pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, the comic even has that "This is Sparta" scene where he kicks the dude into the pit. So I thought it was. They follow each other so closely that it's hard to talk, like, figure out what the difference is. It's like the movie just had some more stuff.
See, you know, I'll give it to you, because I think I figured it out. Is the movie, through volume and acting and motion, is able to add emphasis where the comic kind of fails and make memorable moments even more memorable. Because you say there's the moment where he says, "This is not madness, this is Sparta," right? But in the movie, he fucking yells it. They do the cool slow motion thing that they started with this movie, you know, like brought over from Matrix, and it's like a big moment, and it's like there's so much emphasis on it. But in the comic, the frames are kind of smaller. The text isn't set out any larger or bigger or more dramatic than any other text in this entire comic. That moment is a big fucking deal. Like, that's when he says, "Bring the shit on, motherfucker." Like, that's when he says it by killing the messenger. Yeah. But that moment's not given that extra import in the comic the same way it is in the movie. So the movie's able to, like, just blow the moment up and show it to you and show how dramatic and badass it is. And it does the same thing in the battle moments. But this comic, kind of, not necessarily the pacing, but I think the framing is a little weird in places. And it doesn't do justice to the weight of the scenes when they happen, necessarily. I feel like Frank Miller thought the weight of this comic is in cool fight scenes and action poses, so that's where the bigger frames are. But, like, that moment's a big fucking deal, too. And that's a good line. This is Sparta? That's a good fucking line.
But I think the reason we think it's a good line is because we've seen the movie.
Yeah. That's true.
And because that acting is so good.
I feel like it, because there are two lines where I, like, really remember the movie, and it's, This is Sparta, as well as Tonight We Dine in Hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those were really good lines, and they were the ones when I read the comic, I picked up on it and was like, oh yeah, that was in the movie. As I said, I actually don't really, I know the overall gist of the movie, but I didn't remember a lot of stuff, like, where they got betrayed, for instance. Mm-hmm. It totally did not stick in my mind. So it was a good refresher, but, you know, the thing about this is, I think you're right, the pacing is an issue, because there's all this stuff that could be said about, like, bravery or patriotism or, like, just being a warrior in general. And I feel like it just kind of skipped from, you know, quiet scene to battle scene to quiet scene to battle scene, and it was really hard to track what was going on. So you see them kind of, like, piled up, and there's all these bodies, and they're fighting, and then suddenly they're telling stories again, and then they're fighting in a different way, and it's hard to tell who's who. Leonidas, like, his haircut looks similar to other people sometimes. It's, visually, the movie is so much better. Like, I remember that about it. It's just way more striking. You know who people are. Whereas this is more like, okay, it's 300 guys and they did something remarkable, and that's kind of it.
And they all look pretty Greek.
Yeah.
And the only one I remember the names of, other than Leonidas, is Stelios and Stumblios.
I didn't even remember that part.
That's the only one I remember. I don't remember the name of the storyteller. I don't remember the name of the hunchback. Like, I think the other part is, because what you're saying, Jen, how it just fluctuates back and forth, this is a very plot and spectacle-driven story, and really not so much character. Mm-hmm. The only people who get any character are Leonidas and Stumblios. Leonidas, because him, you get his character as you discover how he was the boy and how he's grown up, and, you know, he talks about his women and his wife. He's like, I kissed them goodbye. I'm ready to die. Let's do this. Like, this is my job out here, is to be king and lead these people and sacrifice myself for my country, and she knows that, so fuck off. You know, like, you get those moments of learning about him as a person, and you get Stumblios' redemption into Stelios, which is kind of a nice little moment. It doesn't have the grandeur of King Leonidas, but it's still pretty cool. But yeah, everybody else is just kind of like a set piece. I mean, the hunchback is there to fill a role. He's cardboard. He does a thing. I mean, he has moments too, but it's all just like, this is my backstory. Oh, look, tragic ending. Okay.
Well, this thing is so overwrought too, because I think in the, like, original myth, it's like, oh, it's some shepherd who's salty about something and he decides to betray them. But in this, he's like, the gods have made me deformed and Leonidas doesn't love me, so I'm going to throw myself off a cliff, but that didn't work and now I'm going to betray them. And it's just the pinnacle of melodrama, right? Like, the whole, I'm going to try to kill myself because the Spartans won't accept me as one of them. And it's like, dude, these guys train together every day. Like, just because they couldn't find use for you in a phalanx is not a good reason to be so upset.
Yeah. I think also, part of the function of him in the story is to be that person. And to show you, like, you know, Frank Miller positions the Spartans and King Leonidas and his personal guard as being, like, the most badass of the badass. So badass that in Sparta, if you're born deformed, you are sacrificed immediately. So then we get the hunchback. You know, we get the deformed guy. And he's like, I have been training, and my spear is sharp, and I can stab motherfuckers. And that's when Leonidas teaches us, the reader, too, like, there's a reason we do that. Because our entire culture is built around battle, and so every single man has to be able to fight like this, and you just physically can't. So you have no function or role in our society as a man, and that sucks, bro. That really sucks, but you don't. And especially right now, you don't. And I think that's, through that character, we see the flaw of the Spartans when Leonidas kills him. Or tries to kill him by shoving him off the cliff.
I think that's like, he survived, he lived, he grew up. Just tell him no. He has a reason now. Send him on his way. Maybe he'll go back and herd some fucking sheep. Like, you can let him go at this point. But Leonidas is like, you are deformed Spartan. I'm going to kill you now, even though you've lived X number of years.
And did, like, he shove him off the cliff?
Yeah, I think he did.
Oh, damn. I missed that part.
But then he survived and was like, all right, fuck you guys, then I'm going to go to Xerxes. So I think that's his role in the story, is to show you the flaws that the Spartans are too badass for their own good. The hubris of their strength. I don't know if hubris of their strength is right, because Xerxes is the one who's proud. Their flaw is that they can't think beyond their own capacity, or I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but that is it.
Is that, well, they character. Can't attribute good to anyone who's not a Spartan.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because Xerxes has, like, classical hubris. He equates himself with a god.
Yeah.
Which is always a bad move.
Especially in Greek stories.
Yeah. Does not go over well. But, you know, Leonidas and the other Spartans, like the storyteller, they have something bad to say about all the other Greeks. So there's, like, the boy-loving Athenians, right? They're weak, they are sad, blah, blah, blah. There's
the farming Phoenicians.
Yeah, the farming Phoenicians who, like, have no business being an army. The Thespians who just die on the last day, you know, and he's like, oh, they were brave to stay, but it's no good. So there is, like, this huge amount of pride, and some of it is well-deserved because they are actually a very effective fighting force, but they are a bunch of assholes, or at least Leonidas is.
They're a bunch of elitist assholes.
Yes.
Which, I guess, then that's their flaws, the elitism. Because he even... And you see that from Leonidas earlier. Leonidas, when he goes up to the oracle and the old men, and he pays them, and he complains about having to pay them, complains about how they exist, and complains about having to go up there, and then doesn't listen to them anyway, because they're not warriors. I think that's what it comes down to. And he is such a classicist, he believes that they are not necessary because they are not warriors. And I get the whole freedom and democracy thing that's going under here too, and they are not about that because they are a class outside of the democracy that Leonidas is trying to build, and trying to sustain. But at the same time, like, they're there because your people respect them. And they're there because your people listen to them. And no matter that you're a king and you think they're not useful, your people do. And so as much as you think it's not worth your time, it kind of is. And I don't know another way around that for him, because I don't think there's any way he was going to match the bribe that Xerxes gave them. But, like, it shows there, too, that he just thinks they're utter trash. Which they are, but he doesn't know that.
And maybe they would have been less susceptible to bribery if he hadn't been such an asshole to them. Who knows?
If their king actually respected them a little bit. Yeah. Although, what I will say... I really did like the coloring in this. How it's very washed out and dirty and grimy. Like, there's something about this that feels dirty and, like an oppressive heat goes through this book. And I know they call it the Hot Gates, but, like, I believe this is done... I don't know what time of year this is. I know they say, like, a certain festival that I could look up, but I believe this was done in, like, the middle of the worst part of August in Greece.
I think you are actually correct. I think that festival is, like, August, September.
Like, I just believe this is the hottest motherfucking time of year ever, and it sucks, which is why they're fuck all naked.
Oh, here, Wikipedia says August or September 480 BC. You nailed it.
Nice. Yeah, but that's not me nailing it, that's the coloring nailing it, because I got that just from this text, and so, like, that's for me, that's the ultimate barometer. If I can get a sense of mood and a sense of time that accurately from... the coloring? That's good fucking work, Lynn Varley. Lynn Varley. That is definitely, go.
The coloring's superb. And even things like the ocean looks oppressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get the sense, like, even the sea is hot there, and it's just shitty to be there, and no one wants to be there, and yet there they are.
Yeah. And Xerxes' men are there fully clothed. His immortals are wearing all black all day. And sure, they're good fighters, but goddamn if that ain't hubris.
Yeah, I feel like the strength of this comic is the art, and specifically, like, the full-page spreads. Because the ones that show the Spartans, you know, kind of getting ready to fight, or, oh, there's such a good one near the end where Leonidas is standing in front of this, like, spherical phalanx that they've made behind him, and it's like, holy shit, that is really well drawn, and it conveys really well, like, the odds, you know, it's just this tiny group of people against this massive army, and yeah. Yet there they are.
Yeah, and they've completely surrounded him, and the art, too, I had forgotten, I remember that Leonidas threw the spear, but I had forgotten what happened, and so when I got to that panel, and it grazes his cheek, and, like, takes out a couple rings, and maybe, like, cuts his cheek open a bit, to his mouth. I was heartbroken. I was like, oh, if you could have just killed that motherfucker. Like, your ass is still gonna get invaded, but, God, if you could have just killed that guy. Like, everything that happened before, that, like, even though I, some part of me had to remember that, but I had forgotten it while I was reading this, because I was caught up. And it was a nice, fun, fast read, but, like, man, I was just like, oh, god damn it, so close, Leonidas! But, you know, no pressure, no pressure.
Yeah, people, I mean, he made a god bleed, so
people talk about, something. Like, the pressure of in being in the Super Bowl, and I'm like, motherfucker, read this. Motherfucker, you don't know pressure. I'm trying to make that throw.
Save the Western world.
I mean, the thing is, like, this comic is so short, and like you said, there's not that. I mean, a lot happens, but not a lot happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like it just didn't. I don't know. It was good, but.
Yeah, I feel like if you want
to... It's hard to talk about, I think.
Yeah, if you want to consume this story, go get the movie. I mean, if you're into comics, read this, because there's value in reading it with the coloring and everything like we're talking about, but I really think the movie was just so much better.
I mean...
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we do talk about, you know, the people often say that the book is usually better than the movie, but sometimes it's not, and that's okay.
Yeah. And they took about the same amount of time. Sorry, go, Jen. That's the second time you got cut off.
No problem. One of the things about this is that the comic is worth reading if you accept that it is by Frank Miller, and he does the Frank Miller thing, where he does have a strong tendency to focus a lot on, like, machismo.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of these, like, super strong but also fairly one-dimensional, you know, dudes who are very... manly men, and they embody these, like, really manly man values, and that can be a lot of fun to read. Like, I think it works in some of the Batman comics really well, and I think it works here, especially when you're talking about Spartans who are, you know, they have that reputation, and it makes sense to characterize them like this. It's just, know if you're gonna read this that you are getting full-on into a Frank Miller comic. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the best ones he's done out of the stuff I've read from him. I've read stuff from him that I absolutely hate, and some stuff that's mediocre, and I think that his style is not necessarily what I'm looking for, and I feel like there are better depictions of this specific story that I have read and have seen, but, like, for Frank Miller, like, I think this is him being at the top of his game, and it's pretty good for that.
Yeah, and he also tends to be pretty soapboxy, but here, I think he is here... but to a degree that fits the story, you know, he has crotchety old man soapboxing, and the soapbox here is democracy and freedom are important, and you need to defend it, and you need to be a warrior. You know, it's pro-military comic, if you want to read it that way. And that narrative is all over in this, because King Leonidas mentions it a bunch, but he's King Leonidas, and the state is still tied to the church, very deeply to the point that King Leonidas couldn't do anything about it. So there's narratives that you can tell Frank Miller put in here for Frank Miller. And you gotta be okay with that, and I think this is one of the places it happens more naturally, because the Greeks were working towards democracy way better and way earlier than the rest of the goddamn world, so credit where it's due. But it does, it's Frank Miller putting it in here too. Also, it's pro-military because it's Sparta. It's not Athens, not, you know.
Yeah.
Not anywhere else out there.
And I mean, and there are some, like, actually really interesting kind of meditations on what it means to fight for your country in this. You know, there are scenes where Leonidas talks about how these boys behind him are ready to die for their country. And they don't know what that means, but, you know, he does, and he's prepared. And it very much romanticizes his viewpoint, but at the same time, you know, they don't win in the end. I mean, they win in that later the Persians are defeated and they serve as an inspiration. But all of these characters, except the storyteller, die. And, you know, I think that is actually maybe a more multifaceted look at violence and the results than we sometimes get from Miller.
Hmm.
So, just by virtue of the story itself, I think that it's a little more broad in scope than some of the other works we've read by him.
And that might also be because, you know, when you do something like this, you are bound to at least some certain degree to the real events that happened. Now, I know, like, whenever you do something that's kind of based on historical event, there's a crap ton of embellishment, and you don't have to look far in this to guess where it is. But you still, like, they have to lose. They have to. There's no way around it. You cannot twist that history event that far and then say this is based on anything real. I mean, you could write inspired by or whatever, but at that point it's just laughable. So there are things that, you know, he has to stick to. And maybe as I read more and more comics, especially for this show, I'm coming to realize that when we first started, I was like, you know, the problem is that people don't give creators enough freedom. And now I'm realizing that the restraints of editing and of necessity often make for a better story. And there's no better example of that in my men than Grant Morrison. But I definitely see it here, too. I think Frank Miller's at his best because he's tied to those restraints that he put on himself by basing this on a real event. And, like, Grant Morrison, I think his best work is when he's edited more heavily, I think, and reined in a bit more. It's definitely not The Filth. But as I get older, and as I read more comics, I definitely am in seeing the value and strong hand of a good editor, and the importance of a good editor. And maybe we'll add that to our credits that we do later on. I don't know. So the other thing we can talk about is the actual format of this comic. This is like in a digital format, horizontal, before there was a digital comics, really.
Yeah.
Which made it really interesting to read. What did you guys think of the format of this? Did we all read it digitally?
Yeah, I got it from Comixology.
Same.
What did you guys think of it? I mean, I know digitally it works better, but I can imagine what this felt like. Like, getting off a shelf, maybe this is why it made such a good movie. It probably... And holding my tablet differently, it felt more cinematic. And that's an easy word to choose because we were talking about the movie. But the whole experience felt more wide and theatrical and less narrow and restrained than a typical comic.
Yeah, I think that the making everything double page width worked well for this. It allowed there to be, like, good battle scenes, and it didn't have to break it up to pace for that specifically, right? Because, you know, if you're plotting out a comic and framing it out, you have to stop and think about, okay, if I have this dialogue here and I want a two-page spread in the next one, I have to make sure that it falls on these pages and not these, otherwise it will get divided, etc. So this let the dialogue flow without interfering with the battle scenes. At the same time, I think it made the dialogue pages too heavy. A lot of them were kind of hard to track where you should be reading, or just they got really dense in information. So, again, like we talked about the balance of this, you know, they're sitting and talking, and then they're fighting, and then they're sitting and talking, and then they're fighting. And I think that in a lot of ways, the way this is framed out as two pages made that more possible.
And that might be, I'm thinking about too, that might be a failing of consuming it on digital too, because if I had this in print, and I had it in front of me, and I was on that battle page, I might spend more time looking at the art and inspecting the scene, and it would be definitely larger in front of me to begin with. And that does mess with the pacing, considering it the way that we did, I think. Like, you know, you sit there, and I had to zoom in a couple times to read the smaller font, because I'm an old man now. And then, you know, you get to the battle page, and you're like, alright, cool, wall of dead bodies, next! And you just kind of like, got it, next. But if I had it on paper in front of me, I might be like, oh, look at that, motherfucker had an earring, huh? That might be a difference, too. Did you guys have a favorite scene outside of the memorable movie ones?
I don't know, because all of the scenes in the comic are recreated in the movie pretty well.
Which is probably why I like Stumblios and Stelios and his redemption, because that, I think, was in the movie, but I didn't remember it at all. I still don't remember it being there, necessarily. I can't imagine they would have taken it out, though.
Yeah, I don't remember. I kind of want to watch it again now, just to see if I can find that part.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing at work tomorrow morning.
I actually like the very last page of the comic, where it shows, like, a bunch of Spartans running with the phalanx and the cape together. It's just like a really well done splash page. It's a cool looking page. Another cool thing is how, like, I like how they use black and white to, like, show arrows in motion. I think it allows them to put more arrows without blocking so much of the scene. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just like the more arrows. So many arrows.
It's the whole we'll fight in the shade thing, yeah. Right?
Jen, did you have a moment? Or did you already say one earlier?
Yeah, actually. I don't remember if this was in the movie, like if they framed it like this, but on the third day, you know, he faces Xerxes, and it shows the view from the inside of the helmet, and he's just surrounded everywhere. And I thought that was, like, a really good way to show the claustrophobia of the scene. You know, it's like, it's hot, it's shitty, he's surrounded by enemies, and then, you know, like, you kind of see it from that perspective, and I thought it was clever.
Yeah, and they mentioned a couple times how the helmet is oppressive.
So it's, yeah, and nice, he takes it off view at the end, too.
Yeah, to get the better view.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys want to rate this?
Sure.
All right. Well, before we rate, I want to definitely say, like I'm going to do every episode here on out, that we would not have a comic to talk about, regardless of what we just said. And whatever we're going to rate it, we have to thank Frank Miller and Lynn Varley for creating it, because we wouldn't have even gotten the experience to read it or talk about it at all if they hadn't done that work. And it's so easy to sit back and discuss and criticize and critique and find fault and laud praise and success, but none of that happens without creators actually going out and making the thing. So regardless of what the rating is for this, regardless of what we've already said coming up, like, thank you guys for making it. Like, that's the important thing, is that people are out there creating and doing that work. So, I'm going to go first, since I never do, and it's episode 300, and it's my fuck damn show. I'm going to give this... Oh, crap, I did all that, and I can't even remember what I was going to give it. I'm going to give it a... 3.5. I mean, most of the stuff that I think I'm finding faults with it is because I remember the movie, and I remember the movie so well, and so fondly. And I honestly believe the movie is better, but that doesn't mean this is bad by any stretch.
This was a fun read. It was quick. There's some pacing and framing errors in there, sure. But when there's a pacing error, you can just sit back and enjoy the coloring a little bit. And like I said earlier, the coloring got some information across that was mentioned briefly, and maybe you have to look it up on Wikipedia to really know, but the coloring got that message across just within the comic itself. And I'm definitely whatever the creator says they did, whatever creator claims the comic was, it doesn't matter. The creator doesn't get to say anything. Once that motherfucker's printed, it's done. So if it's not in the comic, it's not in the comic, and I don't care. So they could tell me it's in August, but if it doesn't look like it's in August, then it ain't in August. But this looks and feels like it's in the worst, shittiest heat in the world in August. And that's in this comic. And not every comic can get that kind of thing across. And that's good work. And I know it's like a small detail, but it really, really matters for the mood and feel and oppressiveness of this, because everything is working against them all the time, even down to the goddamn weather. And so those details do matter, and a lot of those details are done really, really well in here. So I'm going to give it a 3.5, because, I mean, it's definitely worth the time to read. Even if you've seen the movie, even if you're going to like the movie better, this is a fun read, and it's worth the 2 hours it'll take you. It doesn't even take you 2 hours. It'll take you 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Just read it. It's good.
Yeah, 45. It was a quick read.
Yeah, 3.5. David, how about you next?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a 3.5, too. It's a good read. I enjoyed it. It's quick, and like Andy, I think my opinions of the comic were colored by having seen the movie, which is I thought it was a great movie. It's very entertaining. I mean, it's not like
cinema,
capital C cinema, but it is it's well made. It's visually an awesome movie. And I think that is a testament to the quality of the source material too. I mean, because the movie follows the, like, every beat in the comic is in the movie then the movie adds some other stuff to it as well, but the comic is really good, and I think it's worth it was worth the read. So if you're even mildly interested, definitely check it out. So yeah, 3.5.
Cool. Jen?
3.5 as well. I think that out of the works I've read by Miller, this is the strongest. I don't remember the movie very well. I have to go rewatch it. But I think that the thing about this comic is if I had really sat down and taken my time to pore over it, you know, like you said, Andy, that would have been easier to do if I had a physical copy instead of the digital one. And really just, you know, absorb the art on the pages, I think I would have rated it higher. It is beautiful. I think it's really well done in terms of how it depicts the mood, like the whole feel, and kind of the anonymity and shittiness of battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think the pacing was jerky, but if I had slowed it down as the reader, it would have been better. On the other hand, there's not enough in the comic to make me slow down as a reader. It's something I have to go in knowing. And if I reread this, I might, you know, think, oh, it's a 5, maybe. I think that, you know, a lot of people don't hear about 300 aside from the movie, but it's widely considered, like, a classic for graphic novels, and I can see why. I think it really deserves that title, and, you know, it's just, it's well done, and, you know, I would like to get my hands on a physical copy and sit down and just really peruse it. I think that the art's really good, and that it, you know, Miller picked a good story to tell, and I think that's part of it. He picked something that's really compelling. So, yeah, 3.5.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to do the first of our Podcaster's Choice Volume 2 series. We're going to go back through the back catalog of shows that we've done and pick a Volume 2 that we want to read. So Jen is up first, and she's picked Monstrous Volume 2, which is called The Blood by Marjorie Liu. We read this one not that long ago, and I had some concerns with it, but Jen was like, you know, read the second trade. I'm like, that's what we're going to fucking do. We're just going to do 3 second trades then. And I don't know what I'm going to do next. I don't know what Dave is going to do next. We're kind of up in the air a little bit. But by the time this episode goes up, we'll know. So if you go to welcometocomics.com, on the left, you click on the button that says Future Shows. It'll be up there showing what's coming up for the next couple months, because after the Podcaster's Choice Volume 2 series, we're doing a sci-fi series, and then I want to do a series on new heroes, because y'all, it is real hard to make a new hero and have it gain traction. So we're going to talk about like what it takes to create a new hero in comics and actually get fans for it, because that's why there's, you know, how many different versions of all these heroes. How many Spider-Men have there been? Fucking Dr. Octopus has been Spider-Man. So we'll talk about some of that stuff, but that's a little ways down the road. That's welcometocomics.com, future shows. You can also click on past shows. It'll bring up all 299 of our previous episodes. So that's really easy. They're all there, listed in order. You can hit Control F and search for whatever you're looking for. There's a search function too. I'm going back through the catalog and tagging stuff slowly. So if you type in like Peter Parker, hopefully he'll show up in every episode he's been in that we've discussed. That'll take me a little bit of time, because we're gone. This is episode 300, folks. It's going to take a little while. But I'll get there. I'll get there. Just go and keep checking. If you like the show and you want to support it, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. We used to put up a bonus episode every week only for patrons. But now we're just going to put it straight in the main feed, and during that show, encourage you all to go to Patreon and check it out and throw, you know, just a couple cents a month at us. It's tough out there. Nobody has money. But, you know, it'll just show us that you love us and appreciate us. And more than anything, that's what will keep us going. Because we don't need much to keep the servers up. We don't need much to keep doing this. And we've got that covered. So right now, we want to feel the love. And we have some goals there, and we're definitely working towards them. But we want to feel the love, too. So that's patreon.com/welcometocomics. And of course, you can follow us on the social medias. We're at Facebook and Twitter. I don't think anybody does Twitter anymore, but you can follow me on Twitter at JollyAndy. And I will, at the very least, post when these come out. And I have a couple other shows. You can chat me up there, too. Yeah, that's it for this week. Next week, Monstrous the Blood by Marjorie Liu on Jen's recommendation. So if it sucks, I can blame her.
Yep. It's good. Trust me, it's really good.
All right. Oh, the art was fantastic. So at the very least, I'm going to enjoy having my eyeballs on this for another couple hours. And not just because of the great cleavage, but actually good art. Yeah, that's it for this week. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.